ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय या पूज्यतम अनादृत्या कीनाशम अभियाक्षते क्षीयते तद्यशः स्वीतम मानस चावग्य चावग्यया तथा य उद्यतम् अनादृत्या कीनाशम् अभियाच्यते क्षीयते तद्यशस्पीतम् मानश्चावग्यया हतः य उद्यतम् अनादृत्या कीनाशम् अभियाच्यते क्षीयते यद्यशस्पीतम् मानश्चावग्यया हतः य उद्यतम् अनादृत्या कीनाशम् अभियाच्यते क्षीयते तद्यशस्पीतम् मानश्चावग्यया हतः.
Translation: one who rejects an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. Purport: the general procedure of Vedic marriage is that a father offers his daughter to a suitable boy. That is a very respectable marriage. A boy should not go to the girl's father and ask for the hand of his daughter in marriage. That is considered to be humbling one's respectable position. Swayambhuva Mano wanted to convince Kardama Muni, since he knew that the sage wanted to marry a suitable girl. "I am offering just such a suitable wife. Do not reject the offer. Or else, because you are in need of a wife, you will have to ask for such a wife from someone else, who may not behave with you so well. In that case, your position will be humbled." Another feature of this incident is that Swayambhuva Mano was the emperor, but he went to offer his qualified daughter to a poor Brahmin. Kardama Muni had no worldly possessions. He was a hermit living in the forest, but he was advanced in culture. Therefore, in offering one's daughter to a person, the culture and quality are counted as predominant, not wealth or any other material consideration. So here we see is that of the four kinds of marriages that are considered good, three of them give the best benefit and one of them gives the least. For if the father arranges the marriage and then gives his daughter in charity to a suitable candidate, then that the child of that match can save 10 generations before and after. If the father, as we were discussing, by the Daivata rite, then finds the priest to be suitable and gives his daughter to that that boy, then the child can save 6-8 generations. If the girl makes the arrangements and accepts the husband under her father's approval, that will save 6 generations. But if the boy's family approaches the girl's family and then offers respects and then receives the girl for marriage, then the child can save 3 generations. And then the other marriages, then that's not even a discussion. The rakshasa and the other things. It's just, so we see is that it's coming down and then there's a sudden drop because the boy's side approaches the girl's side. So that's considered, you know, not, it's not considered to be so profitable. It's not so respectable. So this is here, then we can see is, so Swayambhuva is pointing out this point. Because as Manu, then he is the one who sees to the religious rules and regulations being established on the earth amongst the human beings. So he's pointing out this point. Another aspect is if the boy is attracted to the girl, that means the girl, then she has the control. Then this will make for a weaker relationship. Because then the girl, she may not need to adjust her mentality to fit with the boys. So then neither will she be satisfied, because then the boy is not that strong, and neither will he, because he will constantly be having to figure out how to maintain the attentions of the wife. But if the girl's side is approached the boy, then this means from the girl's side there's attraction. So that natural relationship will be there. So then the boy can focus more on, you know, developing the proper spiritual qualities and leading the family rather than trying to please the wife. And so then by this leading, then he can actually create the proper atmosphere in which all the members of the family can be satisfied. Therefore, it's always recommended that it's coming from the girl's side of the family rather than from the boy's side. Yeah. Then here he's being offered in a very proper way the hand of Swayambhuva Manu's daughter. And so then, you know, this is being done very respectfully. The Manu, out of his respect for Kardama, seeing him to be qualified, has come to offer his daughter. And so then, because of this, one has to be very careful of the mentality that people coming to me, therefore, you know, I'm independent and pick and choose as I please. Because then we may find when that opportunity goes, then that's not the position. And then we have to go out and beg from someone else who may not have the proper respect in that. So we may get, but the proper appreciation of one's position may not be there. So then that means whatever one's position, that will be humbled because of this. Then here, Prabhupada says another feature is that Swayambhuva, he's the emperor, so he's managing everything. And by his arrangements, then everyone is protected. As mentioned before, he represents, you know, 8 different demigods, Indra and Varuna and Chandra and Surya, like this, Yama. So all these various potencies, then he performs his duties in his kingly duties. And so he is, you know, greatly powerful, greatly wealthy. But Kardama was very poor. He was living in the forest. In fact, they're coming and visiting him in the forest. So, but he was very wealthy in culture. He was very advanced in culture. So because of this advancement, then it was considered that he was a proper person to give his daughter to. His wealth is not necessarily the best consideration. Because, I mean, at least here, means in general, amongst devotees, amongst the Brahmins, amongst the Kshatriyas, that's not necessarily the most important. The character is more important. Like amongst business families, that might be a consideration. But otherwise, it's in character is much, much more important. Because character will always be prosperous, whatever the situation is. That's the main point, is that someone may have money, But if they don't have character, that money may disappear. You know, because it's coming from previous lifetime anyway. And if their character is not there, there's nothing to maintain the money. So it will go. But if character is there, character naturally attracts. So therefore, character is more important than money. Like that. So these are various considerations that are there in arranging a marriage. Any questions on this?
Dowry.
Dowry is basically, technically it's for the daughter. It's the father's, since the father, he gives, inheritance goes to the son in the Vedic tradition. Because the sons would stay on the father's property, while the girls would leave and go to their husband's place of residence. So then inheritance wouldn't be a question here. So the father would, you know, in consideration of the inheritance, would give a dowry, you know, whatever he would like to give to the daughter for her, you know, how you say, you know, comfort. That would be one aspect. Another aspect is just out of the father has great affection for the daughters, so he would always give them so many things, so that when they go to their new place, you know, that they would have a comfortable situation. So the technically then in this you have two. One is a respect for the family, the boy's side of the family, but technically it's gifts to the daughter. So then the possessions of a woman can never be taken by men. This is a very important point. The gifts that have been given by the father, the relatives, things that have been given to her personally, these can never be taken or used by the men for their maintenance. To do so is considered very sinful, because those are there for, in the future, if the husband is not present, then the wife can maintain herself from those, that wealth. So that wealth is never to be taken. But naturally, whatever, as the wife is always engaged in the husband's service, whatever she has, then she always uses. So whatever, you know, facilities she gains from that are naturally part of her service in a relationship with the husband. But at the same time, it means the wife, the husband has the wife has the possessions. It's not that the husband has the possessions. Right? Does that make sense? Means the husband is getting the benefit of the possessions because they belong to the wife, and the wife and women, whatever they, when they like somebody, they always share whatever they have. But he doesn't have a direct access. In other words, means it's what she is using. Then he is, but otherwise he doesn't approach those. So these are two. One is a respect for the family, and the other it is for the daughter. So those things are there. Now that this idea is that you have to pay, you know, that's a tribute to the family, then it throws it out of the first four marriages into the seventh, not even into the fourth, fifth, sixth marriage of Asura, where the girl's boy's family, no, excuse me, that's the boy's family. It just doesn't, yeah, it's the opposite. It doesn't have a position. There's nothing there. So it's just not proper that they're expecting that there. By the girl's good behavior, if she's chaste and well behaved, automatically the family becomes prosperous, because when the women are pleased, naturally then the men are inspired, and so then you know, their work bears fruit, like that. Well, if the women aren't satisfied, then the men aren't inspired, so then nothing really prospers. You know, does that make any sense? So generally amongst us, it can be followed, but it's not so important. Like that means from the side of the father, if he gives something, but it's not. It means he gives whatever he feels he wants to give, but it's not. you know, from that angle, that's what's important. But from the angle of respecting the other family in that, it's not so important. I mean, especially amongst those who are, you know, living a Brahminical lifestyle, living in the temple, they don't have that facility. Someone who is living outside, creating their own economic, you know, platform and all that, they can consider it more because it's a natural thing amongst them because they are working for facilities and money, so naturally they can give those things. But if one doesn't have, then, you know, just like we see in many of the marriages, like amongst Brahmins, you don't hear of a dowry, really. It's the girl, is that is the charity. She comes dressed, ornamented, like this. So it's a respect of the father also for the daughter. You know, that's what makes the Brahma marriage special, is after respecting the daughter by, you know, nice dress, nice ornaments, nice arrangements, then that daughter is then given in charity to the boy. Like that. That's what makes the Brahma marriage, you know, unique. Like that. Is that okay? Yes.
Can you say something about the character involved of the bride to be?
The character.
If the character is good, then the wealth and love.
Means if she's chaste. If she's chaste, then she's like Lakshmi. Like that. She's empowered with that potency of Lakshmi, because Lakshmi is chaste. So then, because of that, then so much the family will become prosperous. It's said that one, you know, very chaste girl can make the whole, you know, family. Family meaning not just now the nuclear, but the whole, what is connected. Previously, then they were very, all the family members lived together. So that whole unit, that family unit, maybe like 50 members, you know, of all, you know, aunts and uncles and cousins and all this and grandparents, you know, maybe 40, 50 people in that group. So that would mean what was meant by family, whoever is connected. Then the whole family could become prosperous. And it's said that if she has bad character, then one woman can destroy the whole family. Like that. You know, same as there, the boy also. Like that. The boy's good, everything's there. When he's bad, he can destroy everything. Like we see Duryodhana. One bad guy, and then he destroyed the whole dynasty. There was nothing left. Means the Kuru dynasty coming down through Dhritarashtra didn't exist anymore because of just him. Like that. But you see that because of Draupadi, then the Pandavas, everything was opulent. Like that. So that means the character is chastity. Like that. Because if that's there, all other qualities are included. Like that. If one has a serving mood, if one is a well-wisher of the husband, if one has that same, you know, mood of well-serving and well-wishing towards the husband's relatives and friends, and has that same determination, you know, same vow as the husband, then naturally everything's prosperous because there's cooperation, and so there's natural inspiration. And if that's not there, then how then how will the husband or the family members be inspired? Right? It means no one can go. I've seen in places, I've heard devotees talk about, you know, there's no community, no interaction between the devotees. And then one notices that the same families that are complaining that if the husband brings home, you know, a friend of his in the evening time, the wife doesn't like it because, you know, that's kind of like she considers it her time and she doesn't want to have to, you know, see that the house is nice or dressed properly or anything like that. And so then she doesn't encourage the husband to bring friends. So then naturally then there's no community. Because otherwise, when are grihasthas going to get together? You know, morning you're at the temple program, day you're doing your service, then evening you have a little time. And then they don't encourage that. So therefore, then how will they bring prosperity? And then the fun thing is then the women themselves are dissatisfied because there's no interaction. You know, then he's not that, then naturally then, you know, he doesn't expand and make his friendships. He does, you know, you understand, without that inspiration, then they don't do. A man is inspired, the man is alone, he has nothing, and he's happy, right? Give him a big plate of prasad, you know, some place to sleep, like that, and a few plates of people to talk to, and he's happy, like that. He doesn't need more. But in a family situation, you need a lot more than that. It's not just, okay, how much he needs is a brahmachari, then you double that, and then you have family life. No, it's like, you know, 10 times, 100 times, you know, then you have family life. So that means that there's a great difference, you know, in how much endeavor he's putting in as a brahmachari and how much he has to put in as a grihastha. Right? So that will only happen if there's inspiration. Men work if they're inspired. If they're not inspired, they don't work. It's a simple thing, you know, like that. Even though because for how you say, men work more on ideological. Ideological, like that. Is that they see it as something nice family, nice these things. Then they're going to get their emotional support from there, and so then they'll work very hard for that. Means even though on one side men are more practical, meaning they approach things logically, but their purpose for approaching them is emotional. This is the interesting point, because by doing this, then they satisfy the family. You know, men like to see the women happy. So then when that happens, they work and they get that reciprocation and they feel inspired to work. Then so much, whatever is their best, they can bring. Like that. And then it's another character, important thing that Narad Muni goes on to explain after those four qualities, is that whatever the husband, father, or son can provide, they should be satisfied with that. Means if they're trying, working their best, what they can bring, the wife has to be satisfied. It's a natural thing. You're doing your best, so they're satisfied. Like a little kid does their best and they take their crayon and draw some funny, crazy little drawing like this. And then, you know, if you go and look now, 20 years later, the mother still has that drawing, right? Because they appreciated it was the endeavor that was important. Not necessarily what was given, the quality of it. So when they work on that platform of emotional satisfaction, then the men are very inspired. And so then they work at their best. And if they're not, then the man, one, is not inspired, but he's expected to work more. So then you have two opposites. And a person has his karma, and he only can work so hard anyway. It's not by working more you get more. That's a fallacy. There's an idea that it is, but it's not. It's just a matter of the commitment to it. That is the thing. Because actually, whatever you're due comes from last life anyway. Because if it was simply more work, then okay, you're going out and you're working 8 hours a day and getting so much. And then if you work 12 hours a day, you know, theoretically, then you should get half again as much. But still, if you compare that to other people, they're working for 4 hours a day and making millions of dollars. So how it doesn't seem to add up. Some even 2 hours a day. Like that. I remember going into one man's office. It was the first day. I didn't figure it out till the afternoon. I had to visit him twice to figure out what was going on. Big, big industrialist. Very big. I mean, at that time, all the buses in eastern India, the bodies of the buses were made by him. Because when you buy a bus, you buy a chassis, and then you take it to this factory, and they'll make the body. So in the whole of East India, he made all of them. Very wealthy person. So I went to his office. He said, come and visit him at 10. I went to his office at 10. I was sitting in the office a couple of minutes before, and all the secretaries were sitting out in the front room very peacefully. And then he walked in, you know, and as soon as he walked in, it was like the place just erupted. And as soon as he sat down, the secretaries were walking in, he was signing papers, phone calls were coming in, he was talking on two phones at once, literally. You know, we see it on the television as a joke, this guy was doing it. you know, he was dictating things. All this was happening at the same time, not one after another. He was talking on phones, signing things, this, that. I couldn't get in it, you know, I couldn't even say hello, you know. And this went on. After 20 minutes, then I excused myself. I said, it looks like you're busy, I'll come, you know, I'll come another time. He says, okay, come at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I came at 4 o'clock expecting things to be a little more peaceful. Then when he came at 4 o'clock, exactly the same thing happened. So I didn't know what to do, so I just sat there, bewildered. Then amazingly, after 20 minutes, all the phone calls stopped, all the letters, all the signing, everything stopped. And then he just sat back in his chair and said, may I help you? So that was, he would work 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon. 40 minutes a day he'd run this business that was making him, you know, millions. Like that. So it's you know, so 40 minutes he was making millions. Other guys work, you know, all day. And they make, so that's not the thing. So therefore, whatever is the person's capacity, the women have to be satisfied with that. Because if they can't be satisfied with that, they'll never be satisfied. It means they themselves will be frustrated and everybody else around them will be frustrated. That's, Vamanadeva makes that point. He wants three steps of land. If I can't be satisfied with three steps of land, I won't be satisfied with the whole universe. You know? And he wasn't satisfied with the whole universe. You know, like that. So he was only satisfied when Bali Maharaj, you know, offered, you know, surrendered himself. That in that devotion, that's what Krishna was looking for. So one won't be satisfied. So this is, these are very essential points like that. But we must understand is those have their reciprocal aspects amongst the boy. Right? Means you're talking about suitable boy and suitable girl. So then for the boy, it's natural. It means the girl is chaste and satisfied with whatever the husband can provide, and the boy is sense-controlled and always trying to look after the needs of the girl. So if those are there, then it works like that. And if those things aren't there, those basic principles aren't there, then it's very difficult for it to work. The boy is not sense controlled. The wife controls the husband by senses, then she can't respect such a man because she's in control. Right? Means the man has to be in control. Not by, you know, that it says here in the book, by his personality he has to be. Means that he can only control by being sense controlled. Like that. His emotions are controlled, his senses are controlled, then it works. It's not that he can yell and scream better, he's got a better, he's faster at the, what do you call it, at a, you know, how do you say, huh? Faster in the draw, or he's got a better punch than hers, you know, like that. He can duck quicker than she can throw the frying pans or something like that. I mean, I've heard of rolling pins. I've heard of dishes. The other day somebody was telling that his mother used to throw frying pans. I was impressed with that. One of those flying out of the kitchen. I said, do some serious damage. You know? So that has to be there. And then sense control, but he takes care. We take sense control to be removed or impersonal or neglectful. Right? Means the brahmachari just gets married. And so because he's just getting married, all his brahmachari friends are still kind of goofing on him. And so, but he's cool, he's tough, he's a man, he's there with them. He's not with his wife. Right? But that's not sense control. Otherwise, if that's his position, why did he get married? You know, he should have stayed with the brahmacharis. You know, so he has neither. Neither is he brahmachari, nor is he a good grihastha. You know, he's useless. So that's the thing, is that combination means a woman is a nature of contradictions. So there's natural, how you say, complementary things in the man. He's self-controlled, but he's caring. So when those two are able to be formed, then it matches the chastity of the wife and her being satisfied with whatever comes. Like that. So that's the fundamental principles of both of their training.
Is it the
Balak
as that arrangement for the daughter? And then by some independence or whatever, she doesn't choose to, not by force, but I mean, it makes a reasonable arrangement. And the daughter chooses to act independently or find her own way towards marriage. Does the father have any reaction? Does he suffer the reaction of the result naturally in some way, but does the daughter have a comment? At what point is this?
Means we see from Swayambhuva Manu that his arrangement, then he shared that with his wife and daughter, and when they were pleased with it, then he then, you know, finalized the arrangement like that. But otherwise, so the father would start making, and then when he'd see, then he would see if that was suitable, if they liked that, you know. That would be from his side. We're talking from his side. We're not talking from the women's side. We're talking from his side. So then he would naturally be careful to see that they're also satisfied, because the point is that you're connecting two families. That's why I said of all charities, giving a daughter in charity is the best, because the other, it's wealth, you give it and then there's no connection. But when you give a daughter, you actually connect two families. So you expand relationships. That's why it's considered the best of all charities. So you have to see that those, you know, the wife and the daughter also appreciated that, because those families are what they're going to be connected to. You know? So they'll have relationships with them also. So it's always good to check that before finalizing something. That's ideal. Like that. So that's one. If the father can't make an arrangement, he's tried it, can't find someone, and the daughter has some ideas, then she can make the arrangements, not directly herself. She's making arrangements that she doesn't walk up to some boy and goes, "Hi." You know, it means that she, through her friends and like this, makes her arrangement. Like we see Rukmini did with through her the Brahmin, she sent a note to Krishna. You know, but her father was quite pleased with that arrangement. The father preferred that arrangement. It was the brother, Krishna. I mean, Rukmini going to marry Shishupal. That was Rukmini's arrangement. It wasn't her father's. Like that. So sometimes we see like that. So then, but it was approved. Or in the Swayambharas, the Kshatriyas, then the father makes the arrangements and the conditions, and then those who are qualified come, and then the father is happy if she picks any of those persons. You know, so then who she chooses, he's approved of, and then so then that takes on that third, it's called Prajapatya, where the girl makes the arrangement, but the father approves of it, and then after giving like religious, you know, instruction to the couple, then they are married. Like that. So that's there. But if she makes her own arrangement, then that's Gandharva. And so the father doesn't need to be involved in that at all. And there's no religious duties for him in that arrangement. Means if he approves of it and all that, then it can be counted as Prajapatya. But if he doesn't, she just makes her own, then it's not so important, you know. He doesn't have to give the girl in charity. He doesn't have to give gifts and that. In fact, generally, when the girl makes the arrangement, then the gifts of the family she doesn't take with her. She leaves those, and she goes off and depends upon whatever the father, the boys, and his family can arrange. Like that. So you can't get everything you want. That's the problem nowadays. Everyone wants everything. You know, it's like you want to get married. You don't want to get married because of the commitment, but at the same time, as the relationship doesn't work, you want to be able to sue the pants off the guy and get all his money. But you can't. You can get married, have the responsibility, you know, or you don't get married, there's no responsibility, but there's no legal commitments. You know, it's like, it means you have to choose, so that's the thing. Father makes the arrangement, then all that wealth comes with it. Father doesn't make the arrangement, it doesn't come. You know, so this is the, these are the, at least this is the Vedic standards, so that there is a proper, you know, thing. You didn't depend on the father to make that, so you don't take his money, you know. But he's arranging, then you can take. It's natural.
So generally, like, the tough orders of marriage are more inclined, like Brahmins and Kshatriyas.
No, those are generally, everybody would follow them. These are the ideal, everyone would follow them. But the means these four are for everybody. But in the other four, then those are restricted. Like that. And those are restricted. That the Brahmin uses the other four, it's not considered proper. Like that. Kshatriya can use the Rakshasa. Like that. Vaishya could use it, but generally you don't hear of, you know, huge fat Marwaris come, and, you know, I don't know what they would go and sit on someone, and that's how they, you know, means the Kshatriya's going and fight, you know, like this, or, you know, or maybe comes in and threatens, you know, I'll buy you out, you know, and then walks out. I don't know, you know. So generally, theoretically, they could do it, but, you know, you don't see it happening like that. And I think they can use Gandharva also. So they're not recommended, but they're not sinful for them. So you have to understand there's a difference between, it's not beneficial, but it's not sinful. Right? Do you understand? There's beneficial, there's neutral, and then there's sinful. So the beneficial is always what's recommended. And something that, it's not beneficial, but it's not sinful, like the kings. They kill the animals. So it's not sinful. They don't get a sinful, they won't go to hell for that. That won't happen. But the reaction of killing the animal, that remains. You know, that animal will have a chance to kill them. That remains. But you know, like you have these, you know, how you say, these horse sacrifices or something, and then that animal is promoted to the human form of life, but all the sin that would have been the cause of the other births of that horse, because the horse doesn't go into human life. You have to get up to cow, tiger, you know, lion, monkey. These ones go into human life. So between a horse and that, there's other births. So those other births, then that sin has to go somewhere. Right? So it goes to the person doing the yoga. So the horse is benefited even though it's killed, because it immediately then attains human birth. But what were these reactions that were there that would have made it not take human birth immediately, those then go to the king or whoever performs the sacrifice. So it means nothing's free, you have to pay. You know, but it's just a matter of, it's not sinful. So people think when it says it's not sinful, it's okay. No, it's not. Therefore, some activities for some is a sin. And for a Brahmin to follow those, it's considered sinful. For Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra to follow them, it's not sinful, but it's not beneficial. You know, like that. That's the point. You know. So therefore, you know, then if they're done, like if a Shudra uses a Sura or the Paisach, it's not sinful for them. It would be sinful for the others. It's not sinful for them, but it's not good. Is that understood? Like that. That's the point. So, is that okay?
What happens? How does the king deal with this then?
How does the?
The person doing this horse sacrifice.
That's why you see the kings and the Brahmins, then they have to be situated in sadhana. It means the king gets up in the morning, if the Brahmin Muhurta, he takes his bath, he does his sadhana, he does his morning yajnas, he gives in charity. like that, so and like that, proper performance of his duties. So by his, that's how they take care of it. Brahmins the same. They get up, they do their sadhana. So that's the thing. So it's a tricky game. That's why it's not really explained too clearly in the Karmakanda section. Otherwise, you might get worried. But because they have the material desire, then they'll perform sin to get their desire. So better they perform pious activities, you know, to get their desire, because that will actually fulfill their desire. So the Jnanakanda section of the Vedas, they'll cut the inspiration for Karmakanda by pointing out these little facts, you know.
You were saying once that the good work does not cover the bad work.
Yes.
How does this pious activity minimize the karma?
No, it burns off.
And then the good work, maybe how it becomes out is good.
Because he didn't do it. It means you're receiving the sinful reactions, but that is burned by the austerities in that.
So the sinful reaction is created by yourself, never get answered.
By yourself, no. See, what you're getting from the other people is you're getting the reaction, you're not getting the desire. You understand? When you perform, sin has four parts. Right, the seed, the sprout, the full plant, and then the fruit. Right? So when you perform a sinful activity, or any activity, even a pious activity, any activity, then that means the seed sprouts. Right? So that's the first thing. Then that creates the situation in which you're going to get the fruit of your result. You know, it's like, how you say, you know, the situation is there for you to get whatever you're supposed to get. Then, the third thing, you get the fruit. So most people look at that part. What they don't realize is there's a fourth thing, is that a new seed is created that you want to do that activity again. Right? So by performing proper austerities, what's called prayaschitta, you can remove those other three, but the seed you cannot remove. The seed you cannot remove. So, but generally, all you're removing is the prarabdha, like that. So the situations and the other things don't go. Understand? Let's say the person performs a sinful activity, he does the prayaschitta for it, but the desire to do it again doesn't go away, as the Prabhupada mentions. So therefore he'll perform it again. Like that. But if you perform an activity and you're not performing a prayaschitta, then the good and the bad will be enjoyed and suffered separately. You try to have the proper understanding of knowledge and vision. You for religious purposes, conceive children, you know, so you can train, you know, them in devotional service. And you're very careful to see that, you know, everything, you understand everything belongs to Krishna, and you see that it's all used in Krishna's service very properly. So that is proper. So the four Ingrid principles are opposed to that. They break that if you don't follow them. So then there's no service. And so devotees are more interested on that side rather than it's just it's sinful. You know, that's there, but it's otherwise you'll have inconsistencies. You know. Like that, because you can see devotees aren't, when they say, well, devotees see it like that, but they don't really, because otherwise then you get inconsistencies, you know, that okay, then, you know, the cows, oh, it's sinful, they're killing the cows and eating these nonsense rascals, so like this, same time as if there's a big tragedy amongst the karmis, and that, then it's always their karma, but it was also the cow's karma. Right? So we're not seeing it in a consistent way. We're inconsistent. So it's easier to see it through devotional service, you know, then that's proper. Then kind of get caught up in all the technicalities of karma. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can you clarify that husbands and wives together for 9 lifetimes? Is this a fact?
I've heard 7. Right. You're worried about this one. I'm just joking. So that is for the karmakandis, because the whole idea is that you have a good working relationship, and naturally, because the emotional sensual platform is the purpose of karmakanda, you know, enjoying all the all that platform, that material platform. So naturally, someone you know, it means someone that you work with, and the relationship is good, you become attached to. So it's natural that you would want to continue that. So therefore then, when the husband, by his austerities and performances of yajna, because the wife is not doing them, she assists, he does them, he gets the credits, but whatever he gets, half is shared with the wife. So then if he goes to, you know, the heavenly planets, she also goes. You know, and then from there, then they become a good team. So therefore, that's the seven lifetimes in that. But for the devotees, then that's not an important aspect, because going back to Godhead, we don't maintain that relationship. You know, we'd be, it means it's a completely different kind of scenario like that. Even in Vaikuntha, it's not a problem, because there, then everybody is, the Lord is there, and everybody's his servant, and they're all married, you know. So then, even if they are then end up as a couple there, then it's fine, because every, you know, one is on the transcendental platform. But for us, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then that element's not an important element. You know, it may be there if one stays in the material world, but, you know, until one perfects and goes back to Godhead. But it's not one of those things that is emphasized, because our emphasis is one lifetime and go back to Godhead. And then generally in Vrindavan, then unless one chooses the rasa of parenthood, then maybe there would be, and you could that could be arranged. But otherwise, if one is maidservant of Radharani, or if one is cowherd boys, or like this, then it won't be suitable. Is that okay? Like that. But otherwise, one works as if there is that kind of commitment. That's the whole point. You're committed to the relationship as if it's going to continue also. You know? Because if you think it's just this one time, commitment may be less. You understand it's 7 lifetimes, then the commitment's more. You know, it means one makes more of an endeavor to, you know, make the whole thing work. Does that make some sense?
That's also discussed for the husband and wife. And actually, this is not just this life, but it's actually 7 lives.
It's not so much as that. I haven't, whether it's an important discussion, it's just an understood thing, because if they perform, means, point is whatever it is, they will go together. It means there's an equality there on the platform of half of the good credits of the husband go to the wife, whatever it is. You know, if he's a very good devotee and he goes back to Godhead, if she remains chaste, this is also based on that point of being chaste. If after he dies she goes off with someone else, then his credits won't go to her. The new line she's gone into, that's where she gets her credits from. Like that. So then, because she joins that family. Like that. So then, but if she stays chaste to that husband, then if he went back to Godhead, then she'll go back to Godhead. Even if she herself wasn't that advanced, or if he goes to the heavenly planet, she'll go there. So whatever he gets, half is shared with the wife. And the bad credits of the wife, then that is shared with the husband. So the sharing is there. Whether you consider the sharing equal or not, that's another thing. But yeah. It's the nature of the feminine condition, nature, because it works on attachment. So its attachment is then engaged, while the man's nature functions on detachment. You know, means for a man to be attached is considered unfavorable. For a woman to be attached, it's not. It's the nature. It's the natural nature. So then, but she's still is flying her own plane. She still has to be attached to that husband who went back to Godhead. She can't be attached to someone else. But means if she can be attached directly to Krishna or Guru, then that's better, because you never necessarily know what the destination of the husband was. You know, so that's more safe. But if not, if she thinks of the husband, then she'll be benefited. You know, either she'll go back to Godhead if he went, or attain whatever position, or she'll take birth as a man. So then it will make that, how do you say, it'll make it that much easier, like that. Well, if the man thinks of the wife, then he stays here. There's no question of going back to Godhead. You know, like that, and then he'll end up as, you know, the wife. He'll end up as like that kind of situation. Does that make some sense, sir? Okay. Yeah.
And if the wife went back to Godhead, if the wife went back to Godhead before the husband.
But why? What is his attachment that he's thinking of her? You understand? Means, why would the husband think of the wife? Out of what attachment? If he was thinking of her as a great pure devotee, maybe. But is that what he's thinking of? You understand? In other words, you remember at the time of death things that were you considered shelter. Because death, you're looking for shelter, right? So if he's thinking of his wife as shelter, then there's every chance he's thinking of the emotional shelter she would give before as the wife. And so then that's not spiritual. Right? It may be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Out of duty, the wife is doing those things. So then for her, it is her path of liberation. But still, for the husband, it's not. It's his attachment. His performing his duties of caring for the wife, you know, then are his means of freeing himself from the attachments in the material world. But his attachment to what the wife is giving is attachment. You understand? So his thinking is different. So that's why it's not considered. The man has to become detached. That's why generally then at least they try to move into vanaprastha ashram, where then the focus is then their companions on the platform of service, like that. That is their companionship, rather than, you know, all the emotional aspects, the emotional, sensual, economic, all those things. Those are given up. Like that. So then it brings it that much closer, like that. Does that make some sense? Anything else?
Yes. There's the system. Was the system in India where the husband was considered a guru? Is it a more recent thing that women are independently a guru, or is that something that's always been there? In Vedic history, like, she has a guru apart from the husband in Vedic times.
Well, if you're working on the principle of purely Vedic, because we work on three systems, Bhagavad, Pancharatric, and Vedic, so we're taking from the Vedic means which social aspects apply specifically in our devotional life. We're not taking the whole. So when we hear the various rules and regulations that are given about this Vedic life, many times we feel it's overburdensome. There's so many rules. But this is nothing. If you want to see some rules, you know, sit down for a pleasant evening of, or a pleasant, you know, month of reading through, you know, mana, and then you'll know what rules are. Like that. So Prabhupada has picked the essential rules that are useful in the life of a devotee. And those have been followed by all the devotees. We see here in the Bhagavatam, we see the Chaitanya Charitamrita. These rules are there, like here, these rules on arranging a marriage. Then, if you don't arrange a marriage, you don't need them. Right? It means, when it comes to marriage, since you're not doing it, then that whole area of the Dharma Shastra is just left empty for you. And you just look at, okay, you have to take a bath, so therefore there's rules on that. Or, you know, some other things. You have to dress, so there's some rules on that. You know, you have to eat, there's rules on that. So whatever you're doing, you have those rules. You don't do the whole thing. But if you're following the Vedic system, you have to follow all of them. Means if you're going for Brahman, then realization, then you can skip the Grihastha Ashram. But if you're going to heavenly planets, you have to do all this stuff as a Grihastha. Everything has to be there. So for us, we don't pick and choose as we please. We pick and choose as is necessary for our service. And that has already been chosen by the Acharyas. So with that understanding, then you can look at it. Does that make some sense? Okay, so in the Vedic thing, then Upanayanam, that was initiation. It's actually a Siksha initiation. This is the interesting thing. Because the Vedic is also the line of Siksha. It's not Diksha. It's a form. It looks like Diksha, but it's not. It's done to solidify instruction. So the guru gives that so that then the instruction is formalized, that now you have to listen to what he says and practice it. You know, and that he accepts you, and he has the duty to see that you get educated. So then Upanayanam, that would be the guru. So then the wife didn't need a separate guru because the instructions were already there. She had already been instructed by her father, who had a guru. Then she gets married to the husband. And though she doesn't go through Upanayanam, the rite of marriage is her Upanayanam. All the benefits that the husband got from Upanayanam and living in the ashram, attending the sacred fire, and serving the guru, personal service to the guru, the wife gets by doing her household duties. She gets the same as doing the duties and menial service in the ashram. By doing the yajna as a brahmachari, she gets that by cooking. And what he got by serving the guru, she gets by serving the husband. So the same benefits are there. And then the husband, he wears the wife's, means the thread. Means that a brahmachari wears a set of three, you know, one bundle of three. But the grihastha wears two bundles of three. The second one is for the wife. Like that. And that would be in the Vedic. Like that. Unless he's a Shroti, or he does these big yagyas, then he wears another one to show that he's in there. So in the Pancharatrik, then that's a different system. Like that. So the Vedic, for us, is basically more of a social, is more just to create the social environment. It's not actually our path of perfection. We use it in aid of, to purify us from the material world, but it itself doesn't give us attraction to Krishna. It works on the side of, don't forget Krishna, because you're attracted to the material world. So you engage those attractions in Krishna's service, and it pulls us out of that. Like that. So it's used for liberation. It's not used for attracting us to Krishna. Like that. So then the Pancharatra system then works on the Gayatri mantras that are for worshipping the deity. So in that case, then in the Pancharatric system, then women can be initiated into that. But in the Vedic system, there's no need of separate initiation. The marriage is their initiation. Right there. Does that make sense? But still, even then, in etiquette, generally, the husband and wife would approach the guru or the husband, and then after getting instructions, he would share that with the wife. Where the women go directly to guru, it's not so traditional like that. You know, we can see also why it has its weaknesses. We've lost many sannyasis and even a few gurus to this. Because it's not the system like that. Especially nowadays, a lot of the girls don't know their energies like that. Women are empowered with energy. That's why they said they're like fire. Fire is energy. They have potency. And unless they know how to channel that and control that, then it's a problem. So traditionally, then the mothers would teach them what that energy is, how it's manifest, and how to apply it. Nowadays, they're not. You know, your mother's out in a miniskirt, you know, so it's like, you know, the only thing of power means on, you know. And so it doesn't matter what it is, you know, if it's over 12 years old, it's fair game, you know. So then that's the problem. So they can't distinguish that their energies, even though they may be dealing with the guru as a daughter or as, you know, as a like a mother or like that, the energies that are flowing are as that of a wife, and they don't know it. Many do know, and so they know how to turn them on and off. Many don't. They absolutely don't know. They've just been unconsciously trained because no one told them. So they don't know. So therefore it's a dangerous thing. Like that. If they're trained, if there's a proper understanding, then there's less danger. Like that.
So normally that means that there's a lot more space. The culture, if approaching the guru, the husband is always the sentiments of his time.
But there must be trust to do that. The problem is if the husband and wife don't have a mutual trust, then they'll feel that the other won't properly represent or properly get what they want. Or a lot of times the women aren't connected to men or not connected very strongly, so wanting that input, then emotional input, then they go to the guru for it, when actually what they're wanting is not the guru's business. It's actually the husband's business or the father's business or the son's business. It's not the guru's. Guru's to give spiritual direction, you know, like that. Emotional support is to come from these others, like that. But because of our backgrounds, we don't necessarily have a strong social system. So therefore, you know, the men and women are not so satisfied. You know, maybe, may not be, it's individual. And so then many times they tune to the guru for support that is not necessary. You know, they call, you know, guru, we were thinking, you know, whether he should get this job or we should buy this house. It's not his business. You know, you talk to someone else who knows, you know, what's a good job and what's a house. You know, he's supposed to know how to get you back to Godhead, not how to get a good job. You know. If it's a matter of understanding the mood of approaching that, whether, you know, the mood on whether we should get a job or not, or this kind of, you know, that's a different thing. That's the, what's the philosophical point, what are the cultural aspects of it, so you understand how to make a decision, but the decision you have to make yourself. That's not his area. But many times, you see, so many of the gurus burdened with, you know, a lot of this. And then, you know, so many, you know, the girls, they just don't have fathers or husbands or sons. And so then they turn to the guru, because, you know, especially, you know, the others in the community don't want to do it. It gets too hot for them, or especially that the leaders of the community, their wives won't allow it, because they know how they got their husbands. So they want to make sure that the husband's not distracted by all these young. I once asked the temple president, I said, how come you don't take care of the girls in the temple? Why they're neglected? You know, and so because of that, then they, you know, they get so much disturbances, and then it's very hard for them to function. And also, when they get married, it's hard for them to function. They don't feel that, you know, support. And he said, it says, it's a very simple thing. He says, I was willing to give that support, but my wife wouldn't allow me. He said, she wouldn't let me talk to them. Because she's worried that, you know, may become attracted by one of them or that. Because, you know, he said, you know, that's, you know, she worked hard and she got her man, so she knows the system. So then, you know, but she herself was not willing to do it for those girls and help and all that. Because there's always that problem is that in the Vedic thing, girls took the mood of mother. So if they're taking the mood of mother, then other women are not a competition for them. Because you have unlimited mothers. Right? You only have one wife, but many mothers. But in the modern culture, the mothers is not an option. You know, it's tigers. So then they have to fight over the same prey. You know, so it's a very difficult thing. You know, it's very difficult. So therefore, they can't support each other either. So they can't take the, if one of the girls takes the mood of the mother in the ashram, then she feels she's old. And if you're old, then you're out of it. In the modern scenario. In the Vedic, you're respectable. Right? Mother Yashoda with the gopis, they're 12 years old, right? But they're married. Mother Yashoda deals with them as a married woman of the community, a respectable member of the community. You know, therefore she's saying, okay, you know, Krishna's 16 years old, right? These gopis are all his girlfriends. And she's Krishna's just come back, he's very hungry, so she gets busy. She wants to busy herself preparing the meal. But Krishna needs to take his bath, and because he's a little boy, right, in her mind, means, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, in a mother's mind you're a little kid, right, means, when Balaram came back to Vrindavan, he's 125 years old, Mother showed him, you pick him up on a lap, put him down, they cry, just that. Right? Karna, right? Karna, big, huge, monster guy. Then Kunti is, you know, crying and putting him on his lap and like this. You know? So that's just the nature of mother, you know. So then Mother Yashoda, then she tells all these young gopis that you bathe Krishna, you know, all go cook, right? You know, because they're mature women, and maybe 12, 14 years old, that they're married, like that. So there's a whole different concept. So here, a 12-year-old girl can have a motherly mood towards a boy that's older. It doesn't matter, because a motherly mood's a motherly mood. It doesn't matter your age. Like that. I've seen myself. We've gone, and when I first came to India, so at that time we were young. We were not 18, 19 years old, you know, the brahmacharis. And you'd go to some life member's house, and many times the girls of the house would serve prasad. You know, they may be 16 years old, 18 years old. You know, same age as you, but how they would deal with you, they wouldn't feel like that. They would feel mature, like a much older woman. So how they would deal and serve prasad and take care and all that. You know, the only difference between the mood of them and their mother, there was no difference in the mood. It was just that you can tell they're younger and the mother's older. But the mood was that of mothers. So then they're respected in every community, right? You know, a woman may or may not be respected. A mother is always respected, like that. That is the thing. Mother's always respectable. So that's the Vedic thing, is that women need to be respected, and so because they have that mood, they are respected. You know, it's like you can't demand respect, you command respect. So the man commands respect because of his controlled senses. The women command respect because of their chastity and that motherly mood. And just automatically you respect them. So in this, then one has to see is that the whole relationship is that the husband's guru pati, and the wife is dharma patni, is dharma. By nature, they're fixed in dharma. That's what the Bhagavatam talks about. Is the wife is like the boat that protects the fortress that protects the senses of the husband, because they're fixed in dharma. So if they're trained in dharma, then naturally they want to maintain that, because they understand that that's what's progressive. Like that, they don't like to break that. But it's strong in activities, but it's not the strongest in the differentiating between matter and spirit. So that's where husband is guru, because they work stronger in logic. So therefore, being able to see the difference, what is actually spiritual and what's not, what's religious and what's actually transcendental, that is their strength. So therefore, then they can see beyond the religious aspect into what's progressive for liberation. That's why then they take the lead. But it can only be there if they're sense-controlled. If they're not sense-controlled, they actually can't be guru, because they themselves, even if they can see the difference, they won't. Because if the senses aren't controlled, then they're going to be under the control of the wife. If they don't please the wife, the senses aren't pleased. So therefore, they can't make that differentiation. You understand? Just like the kid. The kid is there yelling and screaming and making a whole thing. And then you find the mother that's trying to correct that loses. The kid wins. You know? It's time to go, and the kid yells and screams, don't want to go, this, that. And the mother says, okay, you stay here, I'm going. Then you see within, you know, a few seconds the kid's running after the mother. So that's just the nature. That's rasa. You put in, it moves back. You turn the ghost. Right? You understand? That's the problem. The man is thinking, you're going to move this way and it's going to move this way. It doesn't. You're going to move this way, it's going to move that way. You know? So therefore, that's why when the man's after the woman, it works that way. But if he's self-controlled, it turns this way. So that's why the Vedic culture is made like this. That makes sense.
Sometimes the wife is a bit of a devotee and husband almost self-controls her. Why doesn't she become a guru, become a leader of the family?
In one sense she will be, but she will be in religious sense. But the point is that the weakness still remains. It means you have your field. So if you're stronger in your field, it doesn't mean you change fields. It means you have to make things work through that field. At least you keep things religious. Like that. You understand? Let us say you have a math class and an English class, right? And they're both supposed to be expert in there, and then that's, you know, your complete education for the kid. So just because the English teacher is not as strong, does that mean the math teacher is stronger? Does that mean the math teacher becomes the English teacher? You understand? No, it's not his field. That's the point. Is that she'll lead the family, but through religion, not through logic. See, the point is logic man can work logically or emotionally. Or emotionally and sensually. He can separate the three. You can work at any one of them. Women don't. They work at all three at once. There's no separation between their senses and their emotions. And same is when the logic is working, the emotions are also working. Like that. I mean, you know, so many examples can be given, but that's how it functions. So therefore, if you want to get out of this world, then it has to be without sentiment. So you see, this is the path, you have to take it. You can't say, but this one may feel this, or that one that, and what about, you understand? There's no consideration. It means you're going out of this world, you're going to go out with your sword. This is an illusion that there's a nice way to say goodbye to Maya. There's not. It's just you walk out. That's it. Like that. There's not. So that's the thing, is the women will see the path and see the other things, that's where it becomes clouded. It's not that they can't see it. They can see it as well as the man can. But because of the emotional aspects to it, that makes that hard. So the man can see it purely. So then you put his pure seeing, her seeing it, then you only have a little bit of emotion that's an obstacle. So that can be overcome. Right? So that's the thing. So if the woman is, so that won't change. It's not that she becomes the guru. No, it won't happen. But what it can do is if she's the stronger, then at least she can engage everybody in properly in proper activities that are proper for Krishna consciousness. And through that, then she leads the family. But it won't be, you know, intellectual. It's just, it's not the field. You understand? One has to understand what is the man's field and the woman's field. And it's not a matter of rights or anything else. It's a matter of the way it's made. You know, it's just like, this is marble and that is wood. Now, this is harder than that. Right? But if I take a hammer and I hit this lightly, this will break. I hit the wood, it'll just dent. So I have to know what's the nature of them. This is more pure than that. So each has its function. So the problem in the modern society is they, even though they're claiming so much about men's and women's needs, they don't actually know what a man or woman is. They're actually the farthest from it. So because of that, they haven't solved any problems. Like that. So that's the thing, the Vedas knows. But for the devotee, it's not a problem because we aren't that. We're not a man, we're not a woman, but that's what it is. You know? The problem is because we identify with it, therefore we give to it things that it doesn't have. Or unnecessary. We unnecessarily deal with it in a way we shouldn't. If we're not attached to it, then we can deal with it in its proper way. So because of attachment, means and lack of training, then the men can't perform their duties right or women can't perform their duties right. But if there's no attachment, you know, or minimal attachment, then one can perform the duties because it's not you, it's a duty. Then it works very smoothly. Like that. And it works smooth. Because it's just the nature. You want to put the two things together, they go in a particular proportion. You want to cook something, there's a proportion. You want to put salt and tomatoes together, you put a lot of tomatoes and a little bit of salt. You know, if you're only having salt, you can have, you know, a room full of it, no problem. But you want to mix it with tomatoes, then it's only a little bit of salt. So that's the science. So the modern people don't know the science. Now, I want to put salt like I want. I want to put a whole bag of salt. What's your problem? It says, go ahead. Let's see you eat it. And that's the problem, is the people can't digest their cooking these days. Right? And so on. Therefore, it's getting weirder and weirder. Okay. So we should end here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadita Bhaktivrinda ki, Janita Gaurapani.